Coming up on Golf Today, a big-time preview of the Tour Championship, the FedEx Cup finale, with news on a high-profile WD due to injury. Will it cost him a spot in the President's Cup as well? Let's take a closer look at the upcoming duel at Quail Hollow. We'll put on our captain's hats and help Davis and Trevor make their all-important picks. But will they listen? And Annika defends her title at the U.S. Senior Women's Open, looking for more history in the state of Ohio because greatness is greedy. Oh, yes, it is. Happy Tuesday. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It's time to lay it all on the line.
Wire to wire. Yeah, that's awesome.
That was a crazy day, man.
It is that time of year. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside the great Jaime Diaz. We do have some news on this Tuesday. Will Zalatoris was slated to start this week at 7-under par. Will not tee it up this week at the Tour Championship. Now, last week at the BMW Championship, Zalatoris suffered a back injury during the third round and was forced to pull out of the event mid-round. Now, today, Zalatoris announced he has pulled out of the Tour Championship. For more, let's bring on Rex Hoggard. Rex joins us this afternoon from Atlanta, Georgia. Good to see you, buddy. What have you heard today?
Well, this news hit hard, as you just pointed out, Damon. Will had so much momentum coming off that victory 2 weeks ago in Memphis to start out the playoffs. Now, his manager, Alan Hobbs, did release a statement. It said, quote, after Will's withdrawal from the BMW Championship on Saturday, his medical team determined that the course of his back pain is two herniated discs. Unfortunately, this means that Will is unable to play this week at the Tour Championship. He is also very disappointed that he will not have the opportunity to play in next month's President's Cup, where he was hoping to play for Captain Love and represent the United States. He would like to thank his fans, sponsors, the tour, and his team for all of their support. He is fully focused on getting healthy and back onto the course as soon as he is able. Now, we reached out to Josh Gregory, who is Will's performance coach. He said that Will was obviously hurt by this. He was looking forward to having the opportunity to compete this week and use some of that momentum that he picked up in Memphis. But he said, really, he's just worried right now about trying to get healthy. I also had a chance to talk with Davis Love III, who will be the captain of that U.S. team next month at the President's Cup. He'd been in contact with Will this morning. He said he felt terrible that he won't have the opportunity to play on that team. But Davis told him that his priority right now is his health. And he actually offered some advice, pointing out that Davis, Fred Couples, and Tiger Woods have had their share of back issues. And if he needs any advice, all three of them would be there for him.
No doubt. Great reporting from Rex Hoggard in Atlanta, Georgia at East Lake. Tough, tough break for Will Zalatoris, who's been playing so well of late, getting that first win a couple of weeks ago. This from Smiley Kaufman, our colleague, saying a couple shots back of $18 million to 30th place money. That just doesn't seem to make much sense to me for one of the best players this year. Injuries happen. This one just might be the most costly injury I've seen yet. Jaime, this is a tough break for a budding star on the PGA Tour.
Well, backs are so problematic and worrisome in golf, and it's affected some of the greatest players, as Rex was just mentioning. Even Jack Nicklaus had back problems. Fred Couples was troubled by him. Fuzzy Zeller, guys who were in the
Tiger Woods.
Hall of Fame. Tiger Woods, of course, you know. And Seve Ballesteros, he never was the same player. He kind of kept it quiet, but it always bothered him. Not saying that's happening, and hopefully it isn't. But backs are the thing that, you know, are the most vulnerable in the golf swing. And Will has so much torque on that swing. His body is so, you know, tight and lithe. You know, it's tensile strength kind of. He creates a lot of torque and a lot of pressure on that back. And he's a small guy, and so he's creating a lot of speed with a small body, some stress. It's worrisome. But let's just hope he's got the best physique, I mean, the best physicians and the best care plan, and it's not that serious.
Yeah, the timing is tough. Yeah. As well, for a player who we've been watching all season long, one of the storylines was, when is Will Zalatoris going to win? He does so in emphatic fashion in Memphis. It's almost like a star is born type of moment. And obviously, bodies are unpredictable. But how much of a loss is it for the PGA Tour at this time of the year for this 26-year-old star to be sidelined for Atlanta and the President's Cup?
Well, it's a blow, certainly, to the tour's, you know, sort of just overall presentation, because he is one of the best players in the world, right?
And a vocal supporter of the PGA Tour.
Yes, he is. Yeah, and he can still be that. He can still be that. He can still be on the sidelines of the President's Cup and still support and still be a spokesperson. You know, a wise head on a young body. I mean, he is a great resource in that regard. But I just feel worse for Will. I think the tour will be fine, but, you know, Will Zalatoris, let's just hope he's not impaired in any way going forward.
Are you surprised? I mean, we talk about all the advances we have in sports medicine, and these guys work out, but they also stretch and take care of their bodies. Mm-hmm. As you were going through those names, Nicklaus, Seve, Freddie, I mean, it's a reminder that even with the technology and the trailers that we see at every PGA Tour stop, that this is it's not a contact sport, but your body is put under stress week in and week out.
Well, it's always been. At the same time, I think guys are swinging harder than ever.
Yeah.
They're stressing their bodies more because they're in better shape, but the body still has its response. I mean, we see that in baseball. Pitchers throw harder than ever. You don't see any overweight pitchers anymore. You see guys who, you know, they're great athletes and look Olympian in terms of their body shape, but their arms get hurt because they're throwing 100 and they're throwing harder every inning than they ever used to. Yeah. And I think there's an analogy to golf as well, because these guys are swinging and hitting more balls and testing the limits farther than they ever used to.
You seem sober as you talk about this. It's kind of it's a sad story. You seem a little bit like, you're cautiously optimistic for knowing that this game, you know, it doesn't spare everybody.
Well, it robs wonderful primes sometimes. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just hoping it's totally opposite. But I think Elite Trevino as well.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the all-time greats have been bothered by backs. And there's just no way around it. It's the worst kind of pain going. We learned a lot about that through Tiger.
Yeah.
But it already historically happened to a lot of great players.
Unfortunate story for Will Zalatoris. And now the field changes. Instead of 30 players in Atlanta, it's going to be 29 players in the field this week, and where they're going to start their tournament under this starting strokes system. So you see Zalatoris there as a WD. He was at -7. You see Scheffler there, -10, the number one player in the world. Patrick Cantlay coming off that win in Delaware, a couple of shots back. So this is the fourth year under the new system, and here's a look at how those players have finished in the current format. You see DJ and Patrick Cantlay able to hold on and win. Only Rory McIlroy able to come from behind in 2019 to overtake Justin Thomas. And just days ago, some of the game's biggest names actually poo-pooed the system, Jon Rahm and Cantlay among them. So FedEx Cup leaders entering the Tour Championship since 2019. Yeah, this was the guy, Rory McIlroy. He was 5 under, so he's 5 shots back of Justin Thomas to start the week, head-to-head with Brooks Koepka, and able to get it done for a second FedEx Cup title. So let's take our pick and kind of see who we think from that kind of 5 under to 3 under spot has a chance to make a move. Paige McKenzie joins us on this Tuesday. I'll start with you, Paige.
Well, if you're playing from that far back, I'm looking at players that I know can go low, that have a history of scoring low numbers and coming from behind. So I'm looking at Justin Thomas, a player that also has played very well at Eastlake. He holds the third lowest scoring average at Eastlake. But when you consider that his PGA Championship this year, he was 7 back going into the final round. And you look at the Players' Championship last year in 2021, where he was 7 back through 36 holes. He starts this week 7 back, but he's got 4 days to make it up. So I think of those players in that category, I'm looking at Justin Thomas.
Very strong. He won the FedEx Cup before. Your thoughts? You going to go JT here?
No, I'm going to go Cameron Smith.
You are.
Well, I just feel like he's the guy who can run the table and has proven it this year, certainly, more than anybody. I mean, Kapalua sets the record for under par for 72 holes. The Players' Championship, incredible 13-1 putts the last day, 10 on the back nine. Of course, we saw what happened at St. Andrews with the 64. I just feel like, you know, he's got the gifted putting stroke, and he's, I think, very confident that he can do special things under pressure. So
speaking of pressure, a lot of
rumor
and innuendo surrounding this player. Any concern that it could affect him inside the ropes?
I think it could affect him, but it also could be
motivating.
It could be motivating. Yeah. I'm going to show everybody, if I am going to go, that, you know, I'm going to leave him with something to remember me by. Who knows?
But it could happen.
It could happen, but it's probably a distraction. But you know, this is a long shot. But I think if you're betting on a long shot, he's a guy with those kind of tools.
Yeah, for me, it's Rory. He's done it before.
Sure.
At 5-under back in 2019, 4-under going into this week. He's someone is 21-time winner on the PGA Tour. Couple wins already this season. We've detailed how he has found his voice as this kind of PGA Tour ambassador. Stories that we're going to get into later about kind of what he sees and hopes for the game going forward. I think Rory McIlroy in this moment has proven to be up for it. Already a two-time winner of the FedEx Cup. He's done it from ahead. He's done it from behind. I just think he has the profile of someone that I think can get it done, especially under this format.
Well, I mean, Rory in full flight is probably the most, got the most ammunition of anybody.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
So when he gets it going and if he happens to do it, yeah. He's the putter is not Cameron Smith's putter. That's my only disagreement.
But it is improved.
It's sometimes he goes on the incredible runs.
Yeah. 62 on Sunday.
And he's done it.
Canada.
And he's done it.
Yes.
So he's done it. The thing we're talking about, he's done.
He's done it a couple times, 2016 and 2019 as the FedEx Cup champ. All right, Paige, how about like farther down the leaderboard, maybe kind of miracle makers who are at, 2-under or even, for example, who do you like?
I like the name Miracle Makers because we're talking about a very long shot in this situation. Somebody would have to make a tremendous amount of ground. And as much evidence as I had for Justin Thomas, I can give you the numbers, I can give you the stats. I'm going strictly off my gut on this one, and I'm saying Jordan Spieth. Because if there's a player on the PGA Tour that can pull out a miracle, it seems like he's the guy. We've seen it before with the different shots he pulls off, the ability to score, the ability to go on hot runs. When his putter gets hot, it's fun to watch. He knows how to get it done. So I'm going strictly off my gut on this one, and I'm looking at that. Those players that have to make up a bunch of ground, and I'm thinking Jordan Spieth might be the guy.
Special guy, 2015 champ. Tour Championship, FedEx Cup. Are you with Paige here?
I'm always with that. Paige always speaks truth, and Jordan's awesome.
Speaking truth to power, right?
Not to power.
Okay.
fallible. But, I'm going to go sort of the innocence of youth. Sahith Theegala, who I think, he's a flag hunter. He's an aggressive putter. He's got nothing to lose. He's here, wonderfully in the Tour Championship. For the
and
first
loving
time.
Every moment.
Loving every moment.
Thankful for his
just
job.
Let it fly. He shot a lot of low rounds, 64 at Phoenix, 63 at FedEx St. Jude, and then finished T3, and, of course, 64 third round at Travelers, where he would have won had he not double bogeyed the last hole. So he's been there where he's really been in this, kind of zone.
Yeah.
And, I think when you're really young and you haven't had a lot of scar tissue, sometimes you can just go unencumbered through those kind of situations. But it's a long shot.
It is. Yeah. I got to walk with him during a practice round at the old course. He was so thankful.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're about to play in your first Open Championship. He's like, man, I'm still just pinching myself that I have a PGA Tour card. He plays with that gratitude and that optimism. How important is that when you're, this is a big-time pressure-filled week for these players?
Well, you don't want to lose that. You want to keep that little boy alive.
It's hard to do, right? The innocence.
It goes away.
Yeah.
But the longer you can hang on to it, the more you can keep the love of the game as your primary motivator, the better off you are, especially when you get on a run like that, because then it's like, there's nothing more fun than this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about Adam Scott, a name I want to throw at you? He won the Tour Championship back in 2006, kind of toward the height of his power before winning that first major championship, had already won the Players' Championship. He's played in 11 events, 11 Tour Championships. He has 6 top 10 finishes coming off back-to-back T5 finishes, both in the playoffs. I think he's someone that, like a Justin Rose a little bit, who's looking for that finishing kick to his career. Someone who, has had a growing family and is admitted to having ebbs and flows in terms of his fire. I think the fire is back for Adam Scott. He's someone I'm taking a close look at to have a good week, if not, put a scare into Cantlay and Scheffler.
I think Adam's found a renaissance here where he really feels like, I haven't done enough, and I've got a lot left, and I want to make the most of it. And he's really improved his putting, which just changes everything so much. I mean, he hits the ball so beautifully most of the time. Sometimes he doesn't, and now his putter's saving him, which is amazing, as he did on the 72nd hole last week.
Yeah.
That was really a great – just to get into the Tour Championship. So those moments are important, too, because confidence builds when you perform under pressure. And there have been times in Adam's career when he's had some really disappointing moments.
Yeah.
And that can erode confidence. But I think I watch his body language and his facial expressions, and he looks like, here I am. I'm lucky to be doing this. Let's make the most of what I have. And I still have quite a bit.
Yeah.
And especially when the putter comes along, golf gets a lot more fun.
It does. He's putted very well of late. I actually did the feature group with him at the Wyndham, and he played alongside Justin Rose. And I watched 240-somethings who were clearly locked in, loving what they were doing, and still very, very much engaged, Paige. What do you think of Adam Scott?
I mean, I like the pick, considering the momentum and the role that he's been on. And I also think that all of our players kind of fall into this category that they're not happy, they're hungry. Mm-hmm. I think there is some level of letdown when you're like, okay, I have made the top 30. I'm good for next year. I've got the major championships. Anything beyond is gravy. And I think to have players that are still really hungry, still have something to prove at the end of the season, that still have a little bit of fire left for that last 4 days is really important. And I think all three of those players, actually probably all six, fall into those categories.
Love the pride of the players in their 40s. You've seen Stuart Sink do it. Mm-hmm. We've seen Kenny Perry, yes. Vijay Singh thrive in their 40s. Justin Rose is one of those players. Adam Scott, one of those players looking for kind of a finishing kick to their great careers. All right, folks, just getting started on this Tuesday. LPGA returns to Canada for the first time since 2019 for the CP Women's Open. Always a thrill, and so is Ron Cyrak, who will join us to talk LPGA as well as the U.S. Senior Women's Open taking place this week. Stay tuned.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Now, back in 2019, Jin Young Ko won her sixth LPGA event at the CP Women's Open, bogey-free, by the way, for 72 holes. The event was held that year at Magna Golf Club in Aurora, Ontario. Unfortunately, that was the last time the event was held, as COVID-19 canceled the event in both 2020 and 2021. But there is good news for this year. The CP Women's Open returns at the Ottawa Hunt and Golf Club. This will be the third time the venue has hosted the CP Women's Open, the last being in 2017 when SH Park took the title for her second LPGA Tour win. And as you can imagine, stacked field this week. You look at these players, best of the best. Love seeing Lydia Ko, the Korda sisters, Inji Chun, what a year. She's at Brooke Henderson, going to be everybody's favorite Minji Lee breakout season as well. 12 of the top 13 in the Rolex rankings in the field. So let's welcome in Golf Channel contributor Ron Cyrak from Ohio. We'll get into the U.S. Senior Women's Open in a bit. But Ron, the LPGA is in Canada this week. How important is this event for the country?
Oh, it's huge, and particularly the fact that they have one of the top players in the game right now, in Brooke Henderson. To come back there after being gone for 3 years, it puts them back on the golf map, and it gives them a chance to come there when Brooke her game seems to be swinging in the top form right now.
Ron, you know, Brooke is clearly the fan favorite. She's had, you know, great season, highlighted by her second major victory. What has impressed you most about the Canadian this year?
Well, you know, I'm not sure there's any player who was probably affected as much by the COVID interruption as Brooke was. She had won at least two tournaments 4 years in a row, didn't win in 2020, the lost season, won once in 2021. Came in this year, she had to make that adjustment early in the year from the 48-inch to the 46-inch driver. Took her a while to get that going, but if you look at it now, she's 19th in driving distance, she's 41st in driving accuracy, that's translated into 4th in greens in regulation, and she's also getting the putter to behave a little bit better. She's 23rd in putts per green in regulation now. Her overall game really seems to be back underneath her. As I said, that interruption from COVID threw her out of kilter, but she's got it back now.
And that driver story, I think it's underreported and underappreciated as well, Ron. Just a couple months left in the season. What's the biggest storyline you're following as we march towards the CME Group Tour Championship?
Yeah, we're going down the last third of the season right now, and it's looking like Minji Lee is poised for a sweep of everything. She's already won the Annika Major Award. She's first in points in Race at a CME Globe, Vare Trophy, Player of the Year, Aon Risk Reward Challenge, the money list. But lurking right behind her, Brooke Henderson is second in CME and Player of the Year points. She's third in Vare Trophy money list. She goes home to Canada, has a big week this week, and all of a sudden, Minji might not be poised to sweep all those awards.
Ron, you aren't in Canada. Instead, you are in Kettering, Ohio for the U.S. Senior Women's Open. It is entering its fourth year. How has it been elevated, in your opinion?
Well, first off, you know, you look at who've won the first three. You got Lori Davies and Annika Sorenstam. They're both in the World Golf Hall of Fame. You got Helen Alfredson, who's in the Personality World Golf Hall of Fame. You know, so they've had three great winners. in the first three events. Annika coming to this tournament last year in her first year of eligibility and winning by 8 strokes was huge. That brought a lot of people out to watch it, both in person and on television. And I think that they realized that the entertainment value here is terrific. And the event just seems to continue to grow in stature. I think the fields are going to get stronger every year. But they've really, really, really hit it out of the ballpark with their winners the first 3 years.
Yeah, what was the impact of Annika last year at Brooklawn? Just having her embrace that week and her family was there. It just seemed to be a win and a half, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, Damon, I went out to the range on Tuesday last year at Brooklawn, and I'm watching Annika hit balls. And after about 5 minutes of watching her, it occurred to me, I go, holy moly, she's been practicing. And you know this about Annika, she's not going to do anything halfway. So she came into that tournament not only deciding to play, but deciding to win. There was no doubt in her mind she was going to win. And the fact that she went out and did it by 8 strokes showed how remarkable her skills are. Her distance control with her irons last year was as baffling to me as it always had been. It was remarkable. She's not as long off the tee as she used to be, but man, the rest of the game is so solid. And the fact that an icon of the women's game, a woman who played on the PGA Tour, was out there supporting this event was huge for the U.S. Senior Women's Open.
Ron, is the Women's Senior Open the most joyful event in golf, in your opinion, the one with the best vibe, the one that's most appreciated by the players?
You know, when I went out to that first one at Chicago Golf Club in 2018, and I went down to the range on Tuesday, and I looked around and I said, this is where my career started, you know, that, to be able to go out and see all those players. And part of what makes this event so special is it's part college reunion, you know, a bunch of old friends and foes getting together and hanging out. But when they tee it up on Thursday and that bell rings, they all get their game face on and they go out and play. And it's got a wonderful, wonderful atmosphere to it. No question about it. When you can look around and see an 83-year-old Joanne Carner here, and you can see a Julie Inkster, that just makes it special.
Ron, miss sharing press rooms with you, buddy, but I know you have a great week in Ohio. Enjoy it, and we'll speak to you soon.
Talk to you down the road, my friend.
All right, he is Ron Sarak. Here's how you can watch the U.S. Senior Women's Open this week. Coverage begins on Saturday. You can catch the third round at 3 p.m. Eastern on Peacock. And then Sunday, you can start streaming the U.S. Senior Women's Open at 2:30 p.m. on Peacock as well. On the other side of the break, Jaime and I will put our President's Cup captain's hats on as we make our captain's picks if we were in the shoes of Trevor Immelman and Davis Love III. Don't miss it. Back on Golf Today, what a battle it was back in 2019. President's Cup at Royal Melbourne. Playing captain Tiger Woods led the U.S. to a slim victory over captain Ernie Els and the international team. Yeah, Freddie enjoyed that as a vice captain. There's the team and the trophy. Tim, with the last 8 President's Cups, by the way, the U.S. has won every single one. You might remember that tie, 17-17 back in 2003. You had Tiger and Ernie. You had Jack and Gary as captains. 1998 was the lone international win. That was at Royal Melbourne. Captain was Peter Thompson with internationals over Jack Nicklaus. So now we got 2022 to look at. We've got 8 players for Captain Trevor Immelman. You see Cam Smith, Hideki Matsuyama, Sungjae Im, Joaquin Niemann. You've got my boy Tom Kim, Corey Connors, Adam Scott, and Mito Pereira. So we've got 4 picks to make. I mean, DS, you've been studying literally all morning. I mean, seriously, how are you going to do this? How are you going to break this down?
Well, you know, I think it's time to shake things up a little bit for the international team. Okay. Certainly, you got K.H. Lee, who's won twice, you know,
yep.
2 Byron Nelsons in a row. So, I mean, and he's in the tour championship, so he earns his spot easily.
Okay.
But then I think you've got to think about a guy named Ryan Fox, who's plays the European Tour mostly. He's won a couple of times there from New Zealand. Very long hitter.
He is a big hitter. He's
and
a big, strong,
powerful
dude.
Guy. Yeah. His dad was a great rugby player. And I just think he's somebody who in four ball, you know, a team that is is not as long and strong as the American team needs length. Hmm. And so he's a guy who maybe makes some birdies. He certainly had some really explosive rounds. I've seen eagles on TV that he reaches par fives other guys can't reach.
Yes.
So, you know, a guy for chemistry and a guy for what they lack. Who can fill a void, perhaps.
And you like Cam Davis and you like Lucas Herbert as well.
Lucas Herbert is leading the PGA Tour in putting, strokes gained.
Okay.
Got a great stroke.
Very important in match play.
Australian guy, yes. I mean, absolutely. That's the morale builder and so important, especially to turn momentum around. And then Cam Davis is just a really promising young guy who's got a win on the PGA Tour at the Rocket Mortgage, and I think it's time to roll him in there, you know, and get him some experience.
Hard job for Trevor, wouldn't you say?
It's always a hard job to tell people they're not on the team. And then with all the uncertainty going on right now, it's even harder.
Yeah.
Because he wants to make sure there's good chemistry. And if some players are going to live and they're going to be on the president's team, that could create, tension. You don't need that. So a lot more to consider this year than probably average years.
Not to mention language barrier, different countries. Mm-hmm. You know, they've put together the shield, which I love, the logo. You got the shirts and the hats, and Ernie really got the team to buy in, I thought, in 2019. And they don't need any backward steps. They don't need any strife, considering the strides that they've made.
Well, I was just going to say, I think they made a really concerted effort to bring players together better. And so they do have nice chemistry and nice kind of friendships. Mm. And maybe because of that, they'll be able to withstand whatever particular intangibles or tension there is this year.
Yeah.
I think they're in a good spot as far as morale. Do they have enough ability? That's the issue because the Americans are a juggernaut.
Jaime, I like you. You know that. And I like your picks as well. But I'm going to go a little bit different here with my picks for T.I. I like T.I. too. Hopefully he's watching. So I agree with you, K.H. Lee. I mean, listen, he's 65th in strokes gained putting. As you mentioned, he won the Nelson. T5 at BMW. I'm going with Eric Van Rooyen of South Africa. I think he would go to the mattresses for his fellow countryman and captain. Not playing very well, you know, on a run of missed cuts. In fact, 5. He did finish tied for 10th, though, at the RBC Heritage. Sebastian Munoz, he's good friends with Joaquin and Mito. In fact, they have dinner quite a bit. Finished T14 at the U.S. Open. And finally, Adam Hadwin. Last year, he was 19th in strokes gained putting. Fallen off a little bit, 74th, but he's 14th in strokes gained around the green. I like Adam with Corey Connors. Mm-hmm. Then you have that kind of kismet. Because I think they're trying to build, not necessarily the pod system, but something close where they have some comfort with each other, you know, some countries that are alike, some languages, some friendships. I think when you're talking about chemistry, that's an important part of team golf especially.
No question. Adam's played on two President's Cup.
He's got
a very amiable guy. He's a guy you'd like to have in the team room.
He shot 59 before.
I almost chose Adam.
Why didn't you take him then?
Well, I kind of,
you can't
I justified
take everybody.
My great picks.
Yeah, you did. You did.
And I still like you, Dean.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's gonna be fun. Do you think that the U.S. has a distinct advantage? I'm just curious.
Yes.
Before we launch into
for many reasons, primarily the home team always has the advantage in these events. But they just are so deep and proven in terms of the competitors.
Even with players they've lost.
Yeah.
To live.
I think that shows the strength of the PGA Tour to some extent. Yes, we've lost some. The PGA Tour has lost some stalwarts.
Yes.
But the voids get filled.
Yeah, they
by
do.
New guys, because there's just so much, motivation to keep getting better. Mm. And when they see an opportunity to climb up the ladder, everybody's looking for that.
Yeah.
So it happens.
Let's take a look at the six auto picks. Mm-hmm. So the six auto qualifiers, I should say. Scottie Scheffler, I mean, what a season. 4 wins. Patrick Cantlay coming off his back-to-back BMWs. Now, Xander Schauffele, I think, was lost now. Found Sam Burns. Mm-hmm. 3 wins. How about a second Wanamaker Trophy for Justin Thomas, Tony Finau winning in back-to-back weeks earlier this season. So that's the top 6.
Yeah.
Very interesting. What are they doing? 1 year they're going to do 2 automatics and 10 picks? I mean, it seems kind of random, the 6 and 6. I mean, it's okay. It's fine. But it's 6 picks for Davis Love III. I'm curious where you went here.
It's ironic because he doesn't need them. You know, you could almost go there. They had a solid 12, especially.
Just go right down the line?
Right down the line. And I was almost going to do that until Will got hurt.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to fill his spot with JT Poston.
Yeah.
And he's, a winner who's won a couple times with a great, beautiful, beautiful, fluid, syrupy putting stroke.
Yes.
And I just think if you're going to have one weapon in match play and in team golf, if it's got to be one thing, the putter is the one that kind of is a tiebreaker for me.
It breaks hearts, doesn't it?
It breaks hearts.
Yeah, it breaks wills sometimes.
And it also raises spirits.
Yeah, yeah.
Among your teammates.
Yeah.
And JT's a guy who he should be thrown into the mix now and get some experience and see what he can do. I think he's ready for it. He's definitely handled it down the stretch a couple of times to win.
Mm.
So I think the President's Cup is something he would really enjoy and grow from.
Yeah. And Jordan Spieth's just a slam dunk, isn't he?
Yes.
I think he's earned that with his play in competition team and also just being a three-time major champion. And he's a fighter and a grinder who will find a way to get it done by hook or by crook.
And, you know, as we saw, for example, in the Zurich Classic where Xander had a teammate there, he had Patrick. If anybody's having problems with their game, sometimes just having a teammate by their side can get them over the hump of maybe a bad hole that would have hurt them when they were playing singles.
Yes.
And actually raise their game in a way that, you know, is transformative. And
yeah.
They come out of these matches better than ever.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I think, you know, not that Jordan's struggling, but he's just not quite there.
Yeah.
And maybe this kind of, you know, awakens something special.
Yeah. And he has shown flashes. He did get back in the winner's circle again earlier this year. One of your favorite moments of the year.
Yes. When he won at Hilton.
The RBC Heritage. So my list looks kind of like yours. I kind of agree. You could almost just go right down that list. I do think the Will Zalatoris loss is a big one considering how he's been playing. But let's take a look at my players. A lot of similarity. I mean, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, they got the match play bona fides as far as I'm concerned. Max Homa loves Quail Hollow, got his first win on the PGA Tour back in 2019. Billy Horschel, he's won the match play before, brings fire. Cam Young, 5 runner-up finishes. I think he's earned it. I'm going with Kevin Kisner. Mm-hmm. And you might say, well, Quail Hollow, big ballpark. He was the 54-hole leader back at that 2017 PGA Championship at Quail. He's 9th in strokes gained putting. What's his line? This ain't no hobby. He loves confrontation. I think this is going to be a good fit. I think he belongs. I think he's earned it as well with how he performs in match play.
In every area of match play, Kevin Kisner just checks every box. And we've seen that in the WGC match play. I mean, he's awesome. He's a great competitor. I just picked JT only because I thought it's time for new blood sometimes. Let's circulate some of these guys, give them a chance, because otherwise there's almost, to use a phrase, that's a monopoly among some of the top players right now. And it's good, you know, to give some other guys a chance, not just for sentiment, but, you know, for development.
The program, kind of reaching down to AAA to bring the late season call-up, kind of, you're saying.
Yeah, no, I think Kevin's a very logical pick.
Yeah.
And it was between JT and Kevin for me, too.
And Max Homa, kind of a slam dunk considering what he's done this season.
Yeah, I mean, and he won at Quail Hollow.
Yes.
So that's huge. Max was the one I was thinking could be replaced, and that's no knock on Max. But,
yeah.
You know, it's a very strong 11, and he was the 12th, in my opinion. Mm. But at the same time, he's earned that spot more. You know, what's he got? 3 wins now, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Max Homa's.
You think that Davis and T.I. will listen to us? They watch a little golf today.
I'm interested in what Davis is going to do with the one pick. I think it's only going to be one,
be
in my opinion, and we'll see who it is.
Looking forward to Quail Hollow. All right, folks, still to come on Golf Today. I've been following her career for almost a decade, and she's not even 20 yet. Lucy Lee is in the spotlight once again as she achieved a lifelong dream. We'll tell you what the teen prodigy has done right after the break. Welcome back to Golf Today. The first player has clinched her LPGA Tour card through the Epson Tour Top 10, and it's teen phenom Lucy Lee. Back in July, she secured her second Epson Tour win at the Twin Bridges Championship and has locked up her card with still 2 months left in the season. Many will recall Lucy making a start in the U.S. Women's Open in 2014 at Pinehurst at the age of 11. Let's take a look now at the updated standings in the Ascensus race to the card. You see Lea Strom, decorated amateur at ASU, part of that 2017 national champ. She got the clinching point. Gabby Thin, USC Trojan, won in April by 2 over Alexa Pano. You see her there. Alexa's played on the U.S. Junior Ryder Cup team and the Junior Solheim Cup team. Strong class. She was also part of that fun little documentary on the youngsters finding their way, the short game, making their way in the great game of golf. Let's say hello once again to Paige McKenzie. Paige, your thoughts on Lucy Lee? I feel like we've been watching her, and we have half of her life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was actually great. I had a chance to catch up with her at the U.S. Open this year, and I know she's very much looking forward to now having her LPGA Tour card. As said, this has been a dream, and now has finally reached it. You mentioned it, a couple wins this season on the Epson Tour has now given her status for next year, but we're already seeing her start to play on the LPGA Tour. She played in Thailand earlier this season where she finished 12th. She played a couple weeks ago in Europe on the LPGA Tour for the ISPS Handa, where she finished a tie for 27th on a sponsor invite. And we will see her again this week on a sponsor invite at the CP Canadian Open. So she's been playing a little bit on the LPGA Tour this season. I imagine she'll be riding for those sponsor invites for the remainder of the season to try to get some exposure, try to get some reps on the LPGA Tour. And who knows, with a couple good weeks, may get inside that number to get some membership by the end of the season for next year through that category. But either way you cut it, we're going to see a lot more of Lucy Lee coming up.
Paige, you've been on the call for the event on the Epson Tour this season. When you look at the top 10 in the census race for the card, what do you think?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of talent coming onto the LPGA. I think Xiaowen Lin, who was in the second place on Yin, Xiaowen Yin, who's second place, you can see she's only $4,000 behind Lucy Lee, so she is likely going to be wrapping up her LPGA Tour card at the end of this week, the Circling Raven Championship in Idaho. When you look down at Alexa Pano, you mentioned we watched her play. It's a very tight race at the bottom of this list. But Alexa, she's the only player in the top 10 that has yet to win an event on the Epson Tour schedule. She's had a couple of runner-up finishes. So for me, what I'm looking at is a couple of the fact that we're going to see some youngsters. Pano being 18, Yin only 17 years old from China. We saw her play the Augusta National Women's Amateur as a youngster and now has made quite the splash on the Epson Tour so far again this season. So we're going to see some youth. We're not seeing as many returners from the LPGA Tour. A lot of times in those top 10, you'll have former LPGA players that go back to the Epson Tour. That's not quite the story. Linnea Strom is one of those players, but a lot of the players will be first-time LPGA Tour members when they do gain their card.
Excellent point. Young person's game, Paige. So last weekend, there were hundreds of players looking to begin their journey to the LPGA via the first stage of Q School. There's something that stuck out to you near the top of the leaderboard. What was that?
Yeah, if you look at the leaderboard, what was striking to me is how many names were from different countries. Take a look at the country flags next to these names. It takes until the tie for seventh to even get two American flags next to each other. And there's two Thai flags down at the bottom that add to the third that was in second place as well. But a hugely diverse leaderboard from all over the world. And this has been the story across the LPGA Tour and Epson Tour. LPGA Tour had 11 different countries represented by their winners last season. This season, they already have 11 different countries represented by the tournament winners. And then you add to that, the Epson Tour has an additional 5 countries represented by their tournament winners. So you're talking about 16 different countries that have won trophies on Epson Tour or LPGA Tour. This is truly a global game, and it's being represented very highly and very well on the women's side.
Paige, the player who finished on top of that leaderboard for stage one at Q School, a standout from ASU, what do you know about Alessandra Finale?
Well, Alessandra joined the ASU in January of what would have been her freshman year. So she started halfway into the season. She completed her degree in 3.5 years at ASU and decided not to return while she would have been eligible for a COVID year. She turned pro. And I remember when she came in her freshman year, Missy Farkay, the coach at ASU, told me when I asked about what kind of player she was, she said, she knows how to step on your throat, but she'll do it smiling all the way. So I'm anxious to see how she'll continue to progress through Q School. There is a second stage and then a final Q series, which is a 2-tournament series that is the finals. And while she does have an A next to her name, those players that did start the Q School and Q series will have to make that decision to turn pro in that final 2-event series, which I anticipate that Finale will do.
Paige, I noticed there's a lack of top collegiate players in Q School. Why is that? What's the significance of that?
Well, it all goes back to what I just mentioned, and that you do have to turn pro now in order to compete in that final 8 tournament round series. Previous to that, the LPGA had allowed amateurs to compete as an amateur through the finals. If you were a collegiate athlete, you could choose to defer your membership till you finish out your collegiate season. Well, almost nobody did that. We saw Jennifer Kupcho and Maria Fassi do that the very first year, but 14 other collegiate athletes over the last several seasons have chose to then take on LPGA or Epson Tour membership and turn pro in the middle of their collegiate season. This is going to be great news for all of the college coaches, the fact that that will no longer happen. Players will have to turn pro before they make that final two-event series. The other consequence to this decision happening is that players now are all competing on an even playing level. Once you turn pro, there is no safety net of going back to college anymore. I applaud the LPGA for making this change, but that's why we're not seeing quite as many of the top college athletes entering Q School as we have over the last several years.
Paige, what other notable names advanced or failed to advance to stage two that our viewers should know about?
Yeah, one of the names that stood out to me was Bobby Stricker. And that is the daughter of Steve Stricker. And Steve actually caddied for Bobby through the first stage, the first leg of this Q School. And what she said of her dad is, she said, "We just had fun and it wasn't stressful. I didn't feel like I was trying to show him or prove him anything," which is really cool. "We work really well together, and the way that he is, the way that he helps, you know, forget about golf. Just being able to share the whole week with him, we had so much fun." So congratulations to Bobby for moving forward, and congratulations to Steve on the bag. Good first week as a caddy.
Paige, you successfully made it through Q School. Can you tell us about your experience?
Oh, man, it is stressful. I can't believe Bobby was saying that it wasn't that stressful, and good for her to have that mindset. But to know that your future does depend on how you perform. I remember going through first stage at the Mission Hills. I thankfully holed out, I think, my second hole of the second round. And I felt like there was good karma in that it must be meant to be. But that final, when I went through it, there's 5 rounds in that final stage of Q School. And I just remember being exhausted, being emotionally tried, and had 5 three putts that final day because I was so nervous, but I ended up making it through on the number and was so grateful to know that I had a place to play. There's so much on the line when you go through Q School, and I think everybody that makes it through feels the exact same way, that it's quite the accomplishment both mentally and physically to get through.
Love those stories of Q School, the joy and the pain. Paige, we threw a lot at you on this Tuesday. Thanks so much for your time.
Delivered.
Thanks, guys.
All right, folks, let's see who's in the race to the CME Globe. That's where they all want to end up, on the LPGA Tour, down to Naples. Season ender, Minji Lee, what a year she's had. Brooke Henderson, today Ron Sarak talked about the challenges, the shorter the shaft driver, wins a second major at the Mundi Evian. Jennifer Kupcho is a major champ, and Lydia Ko kind of showing that consistent greatness that we're so accustomed to seeing. All right, folks, still to come on Golf Today, let's take a look at the Korn Ferry Tour Finals, who has locked up their PGA Tour card for next year and who has work left to do with just 2 events left. Please stay tuned. Coming up on Golf Today, Tiger Woods meeting with players in Delaware, throwing his considerable weight around the game. What is coming up next for Tiger and next for the PGA Tour? U.S. amateur champ Sam Bennett of Texas A&M joins us after his triumph at Ridgewood. What's next for the young man who likes to say, "Giga"? And Billy Andrade has a big speech to make tonight as the recipient of the Payne Stewart Award presented by Southern Company. His pal Brad Faxon joins us coming up right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
New earlier today, Will Zalatoris, who was slated to start this week at 7 under par, will not tee it up this week at the Tour Championship. Now, last week at the BMW, Will Zalatoris suffered a back injury during the third round and was forced to pull out of the event mid-round. Now, today, Zalatoris announced he has pulled out of the Tour Championship. This statement from agent Alan Hobbs, his manager. After Will's withdrawal from the BMW Championship on Saturday, his medical team determined that the source of his back pain is two herniated discs. Unfortunately, this means that Will is unable to play this week at the Tour Championship. He is also very disappointed that he will not have the opportunity to play in next month's President's Cup, where he was hoping to play for Captain Love and represent the United States. Will would like to thank his fans, sponsors, and his team for all of their support. He is fully focused on getting healthy and back onto the course as soon as he is able. Damon Hack alongside the great Jaime Diaz. This is a tough break for a player who I think was just starting to kind of feel his strength as a young star in this game.
Very untimely, and let's just hope it's nothing real serious and not chronic that doesn't last and hamper his career, because he's got such a bright future ahead of him and he's worked so hard. And he's got in such great shape, you know, and it's just amazing how the back is always, not always, but so often, you know, the weak point, the fragile point where golfers tend to have issues. And it's happened to so many great players, starting with Tiger and Jack and Lee Trevino and Fred Couples and Fuzzy Zeller and Seve Ballesteros and down the line. Now, we've all learned a lot, and medical science learned a lot about how to protect backs, and so have all the physios. But golfers are swinging harder than ever. You know, Will's got one of those bodies that's really flexible.
Whippy, right?
It's whippy, but he does restrain his hip turn quite a bit. It makes a huge shoulder turn, and that puts a lot of stress on the back. Because he's so lean and lithe and just, you know, wonderful athlete, you would think he can withstand it, but you just never know with backs. They come out capriciously, and sometimes they last. Let's just hope the therapy is great, and this is the end of it after he heals up on it.
Patience is going to be very important for him. I mean, athletes don't like to sit on the sidelines. They also don't like to talk about their injuries, but everybody wants to come back faster. You know, if the doctor tells you 6 weeks, you try to come back in four. I mean, that's kind of the story of sports.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's certainly been the story over the years with certain golfers. I mean, Seve came back too soon many times. It's just something that is hard, especially when the economic situation wasn't as good as it is now. I think it's easier to be patient now.
Yeah.
And Will should just think long term, you know, play the long game here. And even if it means missing some of the beginning of next season, who knows? Just do what has to happen to just get as healthy as possible so it doesn't recur.
Yeah, newly minted 26-year-old as well, all wishing Will Zalatoris the best. Here's another look now at 29 players in the field this week and where they will start this week under the starting stroke system. Now, no scores are affected. You see Will Zalatoris there. It's just a WD. You still have Scheffler at minus 10, Patrick Cantlay, for example, at minus 8. So it's a tough, tough break. He will, by the way, still get the bonus for finishing 30th, $500,000 for Will Zalatoris. So here's what you might have missed. Last Tuesday, on the eve of the BMW Championship in Wilmington, Tiger Woods flew up from Florida to take place in a meeting that included some of the PGA Tour's top players. On the agenda included discussing ways to improve the PGA Tour product amidst the growing prospect of a rival Saudi golf league. For more, let's welcome back our own Rex Hoggard. Rex, what can you tell us?
Damon, we know a little bit more about who attended that meeting last week in Wilmington. We also know a little bit better of what was talked about. Now, there was 22 players, including Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. And according to various sources I've spoken to who were in that meeting, the idea all along is to try to find a way to get the top players playing together more often. I think that was the main goal. And the main proposal has to do with what they're calling an elevated series. This would be up to 15 events that already exist on the PGA Tour schedule. Now, these would be limited field, no cut, big money events. Again, to get the top players together more often. Now, this proposal has been submitted to the PGA Tour and Commissioner Jay Monahan, from what I've been told. And even though these types of proposals normally take some time to flush out, and it's not anything that happens fast, I was told by one player who was in the meeting that there is a sense of urgency going forward, that they want to see these changes sooner rather than later. And there was also plenty of questions that still stem from that meeting. Probably the two biggest are which exactly events on the PGA Tour schedule would be transitioned to these elevated events, and also where's the money coming from? Keep in mind, the PGA Tour had already increased purses for 7 events starting next year to $20 million, which is the ballpark of where they're looking to have these events, and they pulled that from reserve funds. So it remains unclear exactly how this would fit into the schedule and how they're going to pay for it.
Rex Hoggard reporting for us from Eastlake Golf Club on this Tuesday. So what do you think? We're hearing all these reports about elevated events, limited fields. It sounds like the World Golf Championships, but maybe kind of with a new sheen.
Yes, I think the concept is similar, you know, to get the best players to play more often in limited field events.
Yes.
Make it, I guess, more spectator-friendly, more star-driven, more marquee. And that's not a new idea, but the execution will be everything. And, you know, the idea that it might be no cut, I think, you know, can put a damper on that whole idea of meritocracy and you know, urgency in terms of competition. You don't want to look like you're softening things too much. So it's a balance for the PGA Tour. They want to see the stars. And, of course, no cut means every player will be around for 4 days. But a cut brings more, I think, authenticity to events. That's why major championships have always had cuts.
Yeah.
And we judge, you know, making the cut as part of the pressure, part of the deal. So right now it's just about a hostile takeover and reacting to it as urgently as possible, as wisely as possible. We'll see what Jay Monahan says tomorrow, but I think the players feel like they have some leverage and they're putting some ideas forth just to get things stirred up, to get everybody creative about not sitting still and doing something proactive. And this is the first idea. It may not actually fly, but it's certainly something that's creating all kinds of new ideas as a, you know, kind of a domino effect. And I think Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy being leading that meeting, I mean, they have another property that they're promoting.
Yes.
That again, is also part of the entertainment value of the tour improving.
Yes, some stadium golf technology as well. People want to say, you know, I want to see Rom with Rory Moore and Rory with JT Moore. The thought is that we don't see the best players in the world enough, especially on the weekends. Was it always that way? I'm curious, in the 70s, was it always Miller and Watson and Jack and Weisskopf? Or are we looking back kind of through kind of rose-colored glasses? Has this always been an issue?
Well, it's never been quite the biggest issue because there were thoughts about a world tour that Greg Norman brought forth in 94.
Yeah.
But also Mark McCormick used to talk about that. He was a super agent who founded IMG. And he used to talk about let's have limited fields. But I just think it's the nature of golf. It's gone on forever that great players are always, in the long run, going to prove their greatness. But in the short term, good players can play great.
Yeah.
And they rise up the leaderboard and they beat great players sometimes.
Yeah.
And so if you just keep diluting the so-called second-rate players, you're actually diluting the challenge of winning, in my opinion. Mm. So I think a full field is still the, you know, of 156 players or 144 players, that's still the test because you're beating guys. 10% of those guys are going to be on their game that week.
And right.
Even if they're not high on the world ranking or high on the money list, they're going to be extremely hard to beat. So the more of those guys that you beat, the greater, in my opinion, the accomplishment.
Yeah.
And, again, the tour has to, they're presenting something that's star-driven just like movies are. You know, it's got a marquee up there and who's the lead actor and who's the lead actress. That's always what sells the movie. But at the same time, it's the quality of the competition. It's the quality of the golf that you're going to see that is the bottom line. And if you start, you know, in any way, I think, lessening that challenge of beating everybody and also making it feel like it's a little easier, then you start to lose some of the allure of the tour, I believe.
It's a delicate balance because you want underdog stories also.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just only want Rom and Rory. You want Rory and Sepp Straka. I mean, sometimes you want Tiger and Bob
May
or Rocco. I mean, you want those kind of opposites as well. I mean, sure, you know, you want to have the greats going head-to-head, but I've covered a lot of WGC events, and you have as well. And sometimes, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, they just don't have juice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I compared Doral back in the day, Tiger Phil, 05, or a young Camilo Villegas dressed in white, the Florida Gator, and all of the Miami community coming out. And then you had a WGC event there. It's fine, but there's no jeopardy. Jeopardy is important in golf. Missing cuts is a part of it. If fighting and grinding on a Friday, it's not as important as Sunday, but it is important, is it not?
It's absolutely important, and it's funny because, you know, we talk about Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and their great rivalry. They didn't really get matched up that often.
They did not.
You know,
when it did, they did. It was important.
It was important. It mattered, but it had to happen organically for it to have the real meaning.
Yeah.
Instead of having it sort of arranged, so to speak. And I think, you know, it's just the nature of golf that when a really talented player who may not have a big name gets it going, he is great.
Yes.
He is great. And you know, the history is full of upsets, so-called upsets. I mean, Jack Fleck outplayed Ben Hogan. He outplayed him in 1955 at the Olympic Club. Nobody ever heard of Jack Fleck after that. You know, I mean, he's always known as the guy who was the upset, and how did he do it? Well, he just he found his moment. And you don't want to lose that in golf either. And it, collectively, there's a lot of guys who can find their moment every week. So when you dilute the field, you are jeopardizing the integrity of the competition to some extent. However, I will say, when you get those great matchups and it's Tiger and Phil, and even if it is a little manufactured, something that's sometimes that's the very best.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this is all in response to LIV Golf. And listen, we've heard PGA Tour players decry the 54-hole, the shotgun start, the no cut. So don't follow that formula necessarily. I mean, I guess you can take aspects of it if you want to make sure that your stars are taken care of. I mean, everybody wants to see, you know, Aaron Rodgers against Patrick Mahomes. Everybody wants to see, you know, Josh Allen. I mean, we want to see the stars perform, but you don't want to take away the DNA of what has made you great. You know, that's what I think is the dangerous line that you have to be careful you don't cross.
Well said, Damon. You know, I think you want to differentiate from this new threat. But, you know, there's also elements of it that have drawn other players there. So try to take perhaps or borrow some of the best of that, incorporate in what you have, and make your product stronger. And I think this is an adjustment in that regard.
You surprised Tiger has taken on this fight in the way that he has, flying up from sunny Florida to Delaware to, you know, and not walking that great? I mean, this obviously is significant to him. Why do you think at this point in his life and career he is standing up for the tour in the way that he has?
Well, I think when it comes to golf, Tiger is pure. Tiger is about pure competition, and everything that's hard about it is what he values most, because that's what he conquered better than anybody else could. And that's what separated him. That's what differentiated him. He could handle the hard part. And he doesn't want to lose the hard part. But he's also a businessman now, and he's also trying to help the tour survive in a way that he feels will be viable going forward. And that might mean making some adjustments. So I'm not exactly sure, obviously, what Tiger is proposing. But I do feel he wants to be a leader to make the wisest choice. And he knows he has the credibility. And I think he truly believes he has the experience and the love of the game that's going to put him in a position to truly lead. And I think it's something he's very proud of at this moment. It's something that going forward, he's going to look back on, and that was an accomplishment too. Maybe I can't play like I used to, but I contributed to the game of golf and gave back to the game of golf in a way that, you know, I was able to do at the right time. This is a moment, and he's stepping up to the moment.
His made cut streak, 142 in a row, he's as proud of that as many of his accomplishments, the six straight USGAs. But you wouldn't think the guy that was grinding on Fridays, and I was there when he missed that cut, 2005 at the Nelson, and you know, he exhaled and he was bummed out, but man, he was proud of the fight that he would show week after week, no matter how you woke up and your neck felt, what pillow you had in the hotel, what meal you had, how your body was feeling, to find a way to fight. I mean, that's what these youngsters, the Spieths and the Morikawas, they grew up watching that or YouTubing that and reading about it. You don't want to lose that aspect of what has made professional golf so great. And Tiger was the living, breathing example of finding a way to get it done no matter how you woke up during that tournament week.
He was old school that way. You know, the adversity, you didn't talk about it, you just played through it, you know. And sometimes the adversity is mental. And, you know, nobody wants to hear it on tour. You know, you just got to find a way to get it done. And I think that was Tiger's, you know, as he used to quote his dad, you know, finish the mission, accomplish the mission, whatever it takes. And I think he feels that's what a part of greatness is. He always liked the grinders. He always liked the overachievers. I mean, he loved the talented guys, but he really wanted to be the talented guy who was an overachiever with all the talent. He wanted both. And I think if he had a choice, he'd take the grinding over the brilliance.
Yeah, get the most out of your game. Someone who did that, Billy Andrade. Big night for Billy Andrade this night, Tuesday, Atlanta, Georgia, the recipient of the Payne Stewart Award. Billy Andrade, been working on this speech, he said, for weeks. What will he say tonight? Watch it on Golf Channel. Much more on Billy's Big Night when we return. Back on Golf Today on Sunday with Sam Bennett of Texas A&M, who defeated Ben Carr of Georgia Southern to capture the 122nd U.S. Amateur at venerable Ridgewood Country Club in Jersey. Bennett, the third-ranked amateur in the world, finished with a one-up victory. He's already exempt next year's U.S. Open at LACC. Look at all the fantastic things. An SEC Player of the Year, two-time Ping First Team All-America, see two-time U.S. Arnold Palmer Cup team member as well. And I believe we have Sam with us, Texas A&M. I mean, this is how you roll when you win, Jaime. I mean, this is what you do. That come looks, home in style. Gig them.
That looks like one of many coming.
Yeah,
it looks
yeah.
pretty comfortable there.
Got that gold medal as well. Sam, we appreciate you hopping on with us. Congratulations. You know, you went through a gauntlet, you know, five straight wins over top 30 in the Wagger. What have the last 48 hours been like for you?
Yeah, it's been incredible. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate that. But, yeah, it's been a whirlwind. Yesterday I was able to, you know, come back to College Station and celebrate with my friends and, you know, we're able to have a good time. But just all the emotion, I was talking to, you know, Coach, and we all knew I could do it. I mean, that I was good enough to do it and that, you know, I had that in me. But to be able to accomplish that feat and, you know, go through the bracket like I did with, you know, the tough ranked opponents, to be able to do that and be able to have the Meyer trophy right here beside me, it seems surreal.
Sam, a lot of great players over the years have learned to play in pretty modest circumstances on rough little golf courses, as you did. And I just wonder, in your mind, how did that shape you as a player? And do you consider it an advantage in some ways in terms of the way you developed?
Yeah, for sure. You're talking about from when I grew up on the nine-hole course?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge, and it's a little different than from some others. But that place was great. I mean, I got to go out there in shorts and, you know, a T-shirt and flip-flops and just play golf all day and not many rules. But, yeah, it was cool, you know, going there. And I still love to go back. But, yeah, I think it helped me just, you know, realize how to play the game of golf and not get stuck into swing analysis and shots and all this stuff, just going out there and, you know, trying to make the best score possible in the hole and not mattering what it looks like, how the flight is, and strictly just trying to make the best score possible.
Sam, the club twirl, I mean, it is all time. Message sent, confident presentation. How did this club twirl come about?
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of natural for me, I guess. I mean, I don't think about it. It's not like, you know, I hit the shot and it's going right at the pin and I'm like, oh, I'm going to give it a spin. It just comes from a lot of stuff. I mean, I've played golf my whole life and worked really hard at it. And, you know, I found myself in situations on the last hole two times where I had to step up there and hit a shot. And, you know, it was the four biggest shots of my life on 18. And to be able to, you know, hit that and hit it right on the button and it going right at it in those circumstances, I mean, I can't just not give it a little spin.
Sam, so far you're delaying turning pro. I wondered what you believe you need to improve on most before you're ready to make that decision.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to stay in the present, and you know, I got work to do here. I got workouts in class first, and then qualifying for my team, and then you know, we head on the road. And my focus is on college golf, and I want to, you know, finish out the season and help my team in the best I can this semester. I'm really looking forward to that. But, yeah, it's going to be exciting once after Nationals next year with the upcoming schedule I have. And it's going to be interesting. But, I mean, I definitely need to get in the gym and gain some weight and get stronger and faster and everything, because that's kind of what the game's turning into. But definitely that and some stuff mentally and physically. I need to have better routines and, you know, get on these set schedules and prepare myself for success. But right now my focus is mainly on the, you know, college level and helping Texas A&M the best I can.
Well, your interview game is Hall of Fame worthy already. Your quote about being the dog in the field, I mean, yeah, you're bringing some pressure and attention on yourself. You know, they're great players, you're saying, but I'm a better player. I'm the dog in this race. How about that mentality and how it shapes how you go about your business?
For sure. And USGA kind of twisted it. I said I feel like I'm a better player. But yeah, I had a lot of it definitely added some pressure because I knew, you know, if something happened, I was already getting a lot of crap for it. But It is what it is. But yeah, it definitely added some pressure. But it kind of started at the first week, I guess, when, you know, Brentley and some other guys, they weren't even listing me as a favorite for the week. And I guess because I didn't play any summer tournaments, but that kind of fueled me. And I did use it a little bit this week. I know everybody's like, why do you have a chip on your shoulder? You're a third ranked amateur. But I definitely use it for a little motivation this week.
Sam, on 17 in the semifinal, you were behind that tree, and Dylan Minetti was down the middle, looking like he'd almost reached the green in two on that par five. And you made a great escape, and then after that made one of the great bunker shots. We talked about, you know, Patrick Cantlay's shot this weekend. I think yours might have been the best bunker shot of the weekend when you get it in there close and make birdie. I just wondered, that turned the whole match, and it looked like you were maybe in real peril. How do you look back on that in terms of how important it was, and what was your mindset as you went through each one of those shots?
For sure. That was a huge moment. I mean, I went from being two up to, you know, standing on 17 tees and he's in the middle of the fairway and don't have much of a shot. And, you know, me and coach talked a lot about that shot, the layup shot. At first I told him, I was like, I'm just going to hit it and hopefully get lucky. And if it gets through the trees, it does. If not, he does. But he thought I was able to get enough hook on it to hook it kind of left of the trees. And we're trying to stay short of the bunker, but it went in it. But that was definitely probably the best shot of my life. Especially my weakness is my fairway bunker game, but it was nice on that one. There's a little rain, so it was kind of wet sand. So the lie was just fine. And, you know, at first we're going to hit a draw, a big draw 8-iron, and then coach talked me into kind of hitting a more straighter 7-iron. And, you know, I hit it right on the button, and I knew it was going to be good because that whole green kind of slopes right to left. So I knew if I just hit it solid and kind of up the right half, it had a chance to get pretty close. And, you know, that was the match. I mean, that was the USAM winning that hole, and I let all my emotion out, and that's for sure what got the job done for me.
Sam, your late dad's message, the tattoo, don't wait to do something. How much does that carry you still?
I still use it and still look at it, but definitely not as much as I used to. I mean, it's been, I've kind of tried to move on a little bit from that stuff and, you know, let people stop talking about the story and everything because everybody knows the story. But I definitely use that. And a few times later in the match, I glanced at it a few times, and it kind of gave me chills and put me in the right mindset to, you know, don't wait and finish this thing off.
Sam, you sure are fun to watch. Congratulations on winning the U.S. Amateur. We hope to catch up with you again soon.
Thank y'all.